Hello everyone, it's good to see you again. Have an opportunity to come together and to study a portion of His Word. I would like to encourage you to turn in your Old Testaments to Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19. Proverbs chapter 6. You'll notice that the title of our lesson was What God Values in Man. And it is going to be basically an examination of the opposite of what is stated here in Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 16 concerning what God hates. Reading that text, these things the Lord hates, yes, seven are an abomination to Him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren. This passage, no doubt, is one that you are familiar with. We have heard lessons discussing each of these things that God hates. But I think it might be instructive to look at things that God values. And one of the ways you can do that is to recognize that light, goodness, righteousness is the antithesis of darkness, evil, and unrighteousness, or that which is profane. And so by looking at this list that we have here in Proverbs chapter 6 and verses 16 through 19, you can see what the opposites of those things would be. And that's what we're going to try to do this evening. In effect, the righteous opposite of evil things are things that God values, because He values the opposite of evil. He values what is good or what is righteous. So let's just look at a couple of these. For example, we would say that God values eyes of humility rather than a proud look, a proud eye, eyes of humility. In the 138th Psalm and verse 6, Psalm 138 and verse 6, we are told that though the Lord is on high, yet He regards the lowly, but the proud He knows from afar. And so cultivating an intimate relationship with Jehovah God necessitates that we be humble rather than a proud eye. Instead, we have an eye of humility. And the reason for this is because pride centers itself. Let me rephrase that. Pride centers on self. It prevents a proper relationship to God, because the one who is supreme in the mind of the proud individual is himself. There are any number of passages which establish this truth. One to make note of is in Proverbs chapter 21 and verses 2 through 4. Proverbs 21, 2 through 4, we are told that every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts. To do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. A haughty look, a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked are sin. So if you have a man who is haughty and prideful, that man thinks that he knows what is best for him, what his way should be. And so he does what he desires to do rather than what God desires for him to do. And so we should not be so proud as to think that we know what's best for us. Rather, we should accept that God knows what is best and humble ourselves before Him. So the difference between pride, which has its center in man himself, humility centers in the will of God. In Proverbs chapter 3, you see the contrast to this haughty look. And that is in verses 5 through 7. If we trust in the Lord with all of our heart, lean not on our own understanding, in all our ways acknowledge Him, we are told that He shall direct our paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. So here is that call for us to center our thoughts and our will upon God and His desires for us, rather than being prideful. So that's a first point, and one that's illustrative of what we're trying to accomplish in our lesson of contrasts this evening. The second thing we want to note is that God values, rather than a lying tongue, a tongue of truth. So truth is the opposite of lies, honesty, the opposite of deceit. We're told in Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 22 that lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are His delight. Lies and deception bring a curse upon us. It is indicative of the type of person that we are, and who is our master? You may remember our Lord's statement in John chapter 8 as he was talking to some ungodly men at that time. He told them, you are of your father, the devil. The desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. But because I tell you the truth, you do not believe me. So if we are guilty of lying, we understand where lies emanate from. They emanate from the devil. And as a result of that, as the Apostle Paul says in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 25, we should put away lying. Let each of you speak truth to his neighbor, for we're members of one another. The importance of speaking truthfully cannot be overestimated. It's so important for us to recognize that relationships of any nature, whether it be familial, whether it be with regard to friendship, whether it be with regard to a brotherly fraternity of Christians, they're all based on trust. And as a result of that, it is important that we always be honest with our neighbor. We always be honest with our family members. We always be honest with our brothers and sisters in Christ. Because if we speak lies, then that destroys that foundation upon which these relationships are built. So instead of the curse that comes as a result of lying, we understand that we benefit greatly when we tell truth. The reward of truth is established fairly clearly in Proverbs 23 and verses 23, where we're told to buy the truth and do not sell it, and wisdom and instruction and understanding. And then in chapter 11 and verse 3 of that same text, we are told that the integrity of the upright will guide them, but the perversity of the unfaithful will destroy them. So when we contemplate these things and we talk about the opposite of those evil things that God hates, do keep that in mind. When we talk about God hating these are things that as a result of God's view of them and how he will deal with them, these are things that can condemn us, can cause us to lose our soul. And so we need to stay far away from those things that are mentioned, the seven mentioned in Proverbs. And instead, we are to, using, for example, Galatians chapter 5 as a construct, the flesh lusting against the spirit against the flesh, that if we do what is spiritual in righteousness, then that which is evil, that which is of the darkness, will not hold sway over us. The lust of the flesh will not have that same appeal and that same power over us. And so truth and honesty is something that is extremely important. It helps to sustain us in the eyes of God, helps us to avoid that destruction which comes from those who are unfaithful, those who are deceitful. The third point along these lines is what God values rather than hands that shed innocent blood, hands of honest work. Now, when we talk about hands that shed innocent blood, one of the things, of course, we can discuss is violence. We can talk about assault. We can talk about murder, those kinds of things. And everyone understands and recognizes that those things are wrong. When we look at the rioting that is ongoing presently, kind of side by side with what we might refer to as or believe to be legitimate protests, we have individuals who are infiltrating that, and they're engaging in wrongdoing. They're shedding innocent blood. They're doing violence. We want to understand that there are any number of ways in which such violence can be visited upon men, that we can do violence to them and be destructive toward them without ever even laying a hand on them. And I wanted to just bring that up because it's something that's perhaps a little less overt, something that we are not quite as cognizant of as we are the wrongness of physical assault, the wrongness of murder, the wrongness of shedding literal blood. And so I wanted to go to Matthew chapter 23 as an example of this, because there's a phrase that is contained in there in a woe that is pronounced by Jesus upon the scribes and Pharisees that I think is interesting and insightful. He says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers, and therefore you will receive a greater condemnation. That phrase, you devour widows' houses. And the idea was that the scribes and the Pharisees were taking advantage of the poor, taking advantage of the vulnerable. And you see that today as well. How many older individuals have you heard about who, because of some kind of scam and being taken in, perhaps an unfamiliarity with technology or a naivete that can come with age, that you have individuals who will come in and they will take advantage of that? I can give just an illustration, not as one who should be naive, but I remember, it's been probably 25 years ago, I was having some brake problems, needing a change in brakes, and I took it to a chain just down the street. And they convinced me that I needed new pistons, and I needed extra work, and that this particular one has a fault in it, and the manufacturer didn't do a good job of it, so we need to replace this. And when it all came due, I spent over $600 on that brake job. And so the next time I asked someone who knew more about cars than I do, where do I go so that I don't get ripped off? Because I felt like probably I had. And he suggested a shade tree mechanic who was a friend of his to do it for me. And he surely told me, he said, you don't need any of that. And he changed the brakes out, and I ended up spending, I think, $75 for the brake job after that. So that naivete that people have because they're not comfortable, not familiar, perhaps in a place of vulnerability such as a widow would be, some people will take advantage of that. And that is an example of shedding innocent blood. That is an example of harming another. And often the reason for this is because of a desire not to gain an honest dollar for an honest wage, but instead to take advantage and, in effect, to gain over the suffering of others. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 9, the writer of Proverbs says that he who is slothful in work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer. And so that slothfulness and that desire to get rich through some scheme and to take advantage of the vulnerable, that's something that God, of course, would not appreciate and would not please him, or it would not be acceptable to him. Where in contrast to that, you have a man who's willing to work hard for a daily wage, an individual whose desire is only to be honest and to be helpful to others. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, there is an admonition the Apostle Paul gives in that text to the Thessalonians in verse 11. He says, we urge you, brethren, that you aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands as we commanded you, that you may walk properly toward those who are outside and that you may lack nothing. So one of the things to keep in mind with regard to honest hands and to industrious hands, and in doing this you care for yourself, but you also, because you're making your own way and because you're being industrious and because you are contributing to society, you have a good reputation and are walking properly to those who are without and serve as a good example. And so rather than having these idle hands that are the devil's workshop, instead having industrious hands that are working hard and working honestly, that's something that God would value and God would say is good. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, we are told if one does not provide for his own household, he has denied the faith, is worse than an unbeliever, worse than an infidel. God values hands that work in honest ways. God also values a good heart, rather than a heart that devises wicked plans. In Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 20, Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 20, we are told those who are of a perverse heart are an abomination to the Lord, but the blameless in their ways are his delight. So again, that same concept that is established, things that God hates, is found in this text as well. Those who are of a perverse heart, perversity, wickedness, those who devise wicked or evil plans, that's an abomination to God. We are told in Genesis chapter 6, you'll remember, that God decided to destroy the world by water. And why did he do that? Well, we're told in verse 5 of the text that he saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of the heart was only evil continually. Can you imagine that? Where men have become so degraded and debased in their mindset, so turned away from God and His will for them, that all they think about is evil things. And that was characteristic of the entire globe at that time. All the men who walked upon the face of the earth. And you'll remember that as God destroyed the world by water, only 8 righteous souls were spared from that judgment. Despite all of the preaching that Noah did in preparation for that coming flood, he only saved himself and his own household. And so wicked hearts bring destruction. But if we give our hearts to God and we have a good and honest heart, then what we will do is preserve ourselves. And that's stated very clearly in Proverbs 23 and verse 26, where wisdom personified says, "My son, give me your heart and let your eyes observe my ways." Wisdom would state that we should be looking to God's will, God's way, God's desire for us in order for us to do what is right. A good and honest heart is one that submits itself to the ways of God. Matthew 5 and verse 8, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." And so God does not want those hearts that devise wicked plans. God wants a good heart. God also values, rather than feet that are swift and running to evil, He values feet of caution, feet that sense danger and stay clear of trouble rather than running to trouble. Again, the writer of Proverbs, in talking to his son, he said, "My son, don't walk in the way with them," having reference to sinners. "Don't walk the way sinners walk. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood." I think that's an important point to be made, and this one especially appropriate for our young people, because there is this idea that perhaps I can maintain companionship with people who are worldly, people who are ungodly, and I can even go along with them so long as I do not actually participate in the evil that they're doing. And I want you to keep in mind the admonition that evil companionship, this is a word, the words of Paul, evil companionship corrupts good morals. And the point is this, if you persist in walking in the path with those who are sinners, of being around them, of involving yourselves in their activities, of making them your friends and your confidants, eventually their ungodly attitudes and ungodly actions will corrupt you sufficiently to where you will engage in those practices with them. And that's why it's so important, and this is a wise man in Proverbs 1 who is instructing his son, his young son. He's saying to him, "You be careful. Don't go with those people. You stay away from those individuals." In contrast, in Ephesians chapter 5, the Apostle Paul calls us to walk circumspectly, not as fools but as wise, redeeming the time for the days of evil. Now, 2 points to be made here. First of all, that word circumspectly. I want you to think, and one of the ways I've illustrated this in times past is the idea of figure skating. And I know that they've done away with this, but used to, with regard to figure skating, one of the disciplines in figure skating, you had the short program and you had the free skate, but you had also the skating of figures. In fact, that's where it's come, figure skating, to where a skater will get on pristine ice and he will try to circumscribe a perfect circle, or he'll try to do a perfect figure eight. And after he does that and does his very best in performing these particular figures, then the judges will go down on the ice and they'll get on their hands or knees and they'll look at the figures. They'll take not yardstick, but a measuring devices to measure the size of the figures, check the perfect nature of the circles, those kinds of things, to just see how exact it is. And the person who wins that section is the one who has done it most perfectly. And I want you to think of that when you think of a circumspect life. If you are walking circumspectly, you're being as accurate, as diligent, as careful as you possibly can be. You're trying your very best not to deviate to the right or to the left. You don't have this attitude that, well, if we wander a little bit, God's going to be okay with that, or that's going to be acceptable. God doesn't expect us to be perfect. Well, God does expect us to strive for perfection. That's what a circumspect walk is. Now, His mercy will take care of those sins we commit as we repent of them. But that doesn't mean that we can walk willy-nilly instead of circumspectly. You've heard that phrase, willy-nilly. I think that's a pretty good opposite to the idea of the circumspect walk. The second thing is to redeem the time. That is, you walk in such a way because you realize that you only have a certain amount of time here on this earth, and it's important that you take care of what is needed today because you have no assurance of tomorrow. And so the kind of feet that you have is set of feet that are walking in a way of destruction, swift running to evil. Instead, you want to have feet that are swift to run away from evil. Remember what Paul said again to young people in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22, flee also youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Flee youthful lusts. Don't go that direction. Don't stay in that area. Don't flirt with that evil. Run away from it as fast as you possibly can. That's what God expects and what God values. And then we have two final ones. One is, rather than a false witness who speaks lies, one who advocates justice and mercy. I want you to think about what happens when an individual speaks a false witness against another. What's the purpose? What's the motivation of that? We can give an example in Matthew chapter 26 when the chief priests and the elders and all the council sought false testimony against Jesus to put him to death. They wanted to destroy him. They wanted to destroy his reputation. They wanted to destroy his influence. They wanted to destroy his life. And so for that very purpose, they had individuals bear false witness against him because they were seeking to harm him. In contrast to that, we need to advocate for justice and to extend mercy to others. That's what God values in us, a merciful and upright spirit. So passages such as Proverbs 3, where it says, let not mercy and truth forsake you, bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart, and so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 31, he who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who honors him has mercy on the needy. Rather than false witness, rather than trying to tear down, rather than trying to destroy others by what you have to say, instead extend that mercy, express that righteous concern, and as such uplift rather than to destroy. Proverbs 21:15, it's a joy for the just to do justice, but destruction will come to the workers of iniquity. And that is because God hates that false witness who speaks lies, but he values an individual who advocates for justice and advocates for mercy. And then that gets us to the final point in this series, and that is that rather than having one who sows discord among brethren, one who is divisive, we understand that God values individuals who cultivate peaceful relationships. We're not trying to tear down, we are trying to build up. Instigators of strife use a number of different tactics in order to create and sow discord. They do things like gossiping, trying to foment strife by making individuals angry at one another, by speaking evil and mean things toward others, or perhaps trying to elicit pride in individuals, to extol some over others, or to create some kind of a hierarchy, a disparity between two groups. And anything that can be done to be disruptive in this way is done by those who have that ungodly spirit. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 12 tells us that hatred stirs up strife. Hatred stirs up strife. An individual who's hateful, he has hateful feelings toward a particular individual or a particular group. So what does he do? Because of that motivation in his heart, he does what he can to stir up problems. But love, we are told, covers all sins. In Proverbs 16 and 28, we are told that a perverse man sow strife. A whisperer separates the best of men. Now, we were talking about perversity, a twisted heart, an individual whose mindset is not on good or evil. He's going to seek and strive to bring destruction. He's going to sow strife. And we're told that one who gossips whispers. As a result of such gossip and whispering, he can cause problems as well, even among the best of friends. And so we should not be that way. What God values in us is that we be peacemakers. Three passages, two of them in Proverbs, which teaches this. The first one in Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 7. When a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. It's one of the interesting things about a righteous life is we live a life of righteousness. We're striving to do what is right because the principles of righteousness are so beneficial. When we talk about honesty and we talk about love and we talk about kindness and we talk about long-suffering, we talk about meekness, these kinds of things make people like you. If you're striving to live righteously as a result of your efforts to be a righteous person, people are going to gravitate toward you and be at peace with you, even individuals who may have a conflict. We're told that a soft answer turns away wrath. One of the best things that you can do is someone approaches you with anger or rancor in their heart because of something they perceive you have done. Perhaps you have even done it. If you can mollify them, appease them by acting in a righteous and a godly way, often you can win over an enemy and make him your friend. Proverbs 17 and verse 9, a very similar passage, tells us that he who covers a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates friends. Now think of that, because again, this contrast is given. One who brings strife, what does he do? When someone comes to him and there is even a transgression, he's wanting help to make things right. There are one of two ways that you can do it. You can treat him with integrity. You can keep it as a secret or something that someone has confided in you, and to treat that person in a righteous way. Deal with the sin as necessary, but bring not shame or try to humiliate that individual, but rather to build him up and to bring him back in standing. Remember the text of Galatians 6, when we are told that if we're spiritual, we should restore such a one, that sinner, in a spirit of meekness, considering ourselves, lest we also be tempted. In other words, treating them the way we would like to be treated, and that very well may be keeping that confidence. Whereas an individual who would treat him in an ungodly way, someone comes to him with that confidence, even again if it is a transgression, and immediately you share it with others, and it causes that discord and causes that conflict. Basically what we're saying, as Paul did in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 3, is that we are to be always endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. He wants us to be unifiers. He does not want us to be dividers. And again, we do understand limitations with regard to such calls for fellowship and unity, because we cannot have fellowship with those who themselves are steeped in sin. But as much as is in me, may I be one who brings unity rather than division to the people of God. So that's basically the idea that I wanted to share with you in the lesson day. I know it's not a particularly long one, but hopefully some practical things for us to consider as we again look at the antonyms or the opposites of those things that are things that God hates. And so may each of us be willing to humble ourselves as we conduct our business one with another, to always be truthful, to be honest with our hands and work diligently, to be sincere and pure in heart, to avoid evil rather than running to it, to seek to help the poor and vulnerable rather than seeking to take advantage of them. And finally, as much as is within us, as much as we are capable, as much as it depends upon us, to be at peace with all men. Just some things to think about. I hope and pray that this has been beneficial to you, and we will see you again soon.